The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
And welcome back to Generations Radio, and thank you for tuning in this weekend. It's November now, and or actually late October. But anyway, we're here with one of our cover people from the most recent issue of Generations Magazine, the October-November issue for 2018, Caregiving in the Cycle of Life. And one of our caregivers here in the feature, Pat Bemis, who is actually the current caregiver. Because if you read the story or get a chance to read it, either online or go to the library or the YMCA or 200 other locations we have, and the newest one, Times Pharmacies, we talk about the four types of people in the world, and they are, because I always forget, people that have been a caregiver, people that are caregivers, people that are going to be caregivers, and people that are going to actually need care of themselves. So Pat Bemis, actually a retired nurse, neonatal nurse, is our cover story, and we're having Pat back because she was on our previous a couple of other shows, but we want to spend more time with her personally, with her life, and I thank her for her story. And actually, I met your husband. I thought to bring him here too. Maybe next time we'll bring him in. But his story is great. I'm sure he's in great care. But Pat, tell us your story, or actually your professional background first, because you are a neonatal nurse, so that's different than dealing with a spouse, let alone somebody that has Parkinson's. You know? So welcome to the show, Pat.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story in the magazine. It was a wonderful job and a great opportunity. When I graduated from nursing school, I decided that I didn't care for adults. And after going through pediatrics, that was what made my heart sing, and I did pediatrics and then went into babies after a while, and I really found that to be such a joy, to watch people enter life and to be there at the beginning when families became a family, couples, seeing the product of the two of them. And so that was such a joy. And then before I left hospital nursing, I switched to the end of life. And it wasn't so much that I now began to love adults. It was more I loved the process. And the process was so similar to the beginning of life. To be there at the end of life was such an honor.
But that's such a total different spectrum of emotion. First, mm-hmm. that's what I'm thinking, because I can still remember the day I had my son, and I've had clients that passed on, and I was there, and that's such an emotional misdirection.
Mm-hmm. It can be, but for a nurse, to be a witness to that really helps you complete the cycle of your work, to see how you can help people at the beginning, and then and to celebrate, not so much mourn, but to help families celebrate the end of life and to hear their story at the hardest time that they've ever had.
Sure.
And so you, as a nurse, you have the opportunity to turn something that's very, very tragic into a moment of joy and that can be shared with everyone there. And one of the things that I introduced that was from the neonatal side is that when babies died, parents had so limited time with their infant that there was a program that started to take photos and to give the photos to the family when and if they were ready to look at them. And we did a really great job of photographing these babies as best we could. And I introduced that to the end of life. And I'll never forget, there was one family who had so many generations in this crowded private room at Kaiser Hospital, and asking them, would you like to have a photo? as her heart rate was going down, and having them all gather around the bed and all have their hand on her and to take that photo. And then someone said, I'm running to Long's right now and making copies for everyone. And it was the nursing staff thought I had lost my mind. But the family was so appreciative. And so I took a risk, and I've never regretted that.
So you've dealt with the infant end of life and also the adult end of life?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So were you a hospice, trained hospice?
Actually, my job was a family care coordinator. And so I've always loved working with families, as new parents and new grandparents. And then that transferred really nicely to folks struggling with when to discontinue therapy, when to stop having a code, how to enjoy the last days of someone's life. And there's no instruction manual for that.
No, there really isn't. Everybody grieves differently as I've learned over time.
Yes.
But I actually met you many years ago, and you're still doing this with ARP and mm-hmm. other entities. You do a lot of workshops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that because I love teaching, and I learn by teaching. Mm-hmm. And you realize when you're teaching that you're connecting with people on a real personal level, that they want to come and tell you their story after you're done teaching, which is another gift.
Mm. Well, what I like about you is you have the firsthand experience. Mm-hmm. And you can empathize with the people you're talking to. Because I've seen a lot of presentations. I go to a lot of presentations, and usually have volunteers. I may have a little bit of experience, but not a wealth of experience like yourself. And now you're dealing with your husband who's, and now, correct me if I'm wrong, has had Parkinson's, was diagnosed with Parkinson's at 30?
He was 38.
38, and he is now 60-something, right?
68.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met him, and he's actually, we got a picture, a photo mm-hmm. in the magazine with him. And I'm an amateur, and I'm not a medical field, but 30 years of dealing with Parkinson's, and he's done well.
He has done well. He was early onset, and that's kind of the trajectory for early onset. They don't have severe symptoms in a short period of time. It is a gradual progression. And I have to say that bugger, he really extended things. I mean, when he retired, he took up woodworking. He took up golf. He never had time for any of that stuff. He skied the Diamond Slopes. I mean, he was relentless in his pursuit of, I'm going to do as much as I can. He coached soccer for my daughter's soccer team. And so he didn't let it define him.
And he was doing all this when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When he was
before
he was... I don't want to say he was a doctor.
He was a physician.
He was a neonatologist, and that consumed a lot of his time. Plus, we have four girls between us. So there wasn't any real free time other than, when we could squeeze a date night in. But once he retired, it turned a page for him. And I think that's helped him be as healthy in mind and body and spirit as he is now. He was diagnosed several years ago with Parkinson's dementia, and that is his biggest problem that he really doesn't like. He's always been a conversationalist, and he enjoys talking with people. Not so much randomly, but to deep conversations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he gets lost in the conversation now.
Oh, I do too, I'll be honest with you. My mind's thinking about this while you're talking to me right now about this on the left side.
Uh-huh.
But I met him. And, mm-hmm. I mean, he's done very well, and thanks to you as well. But I was just amazed at somebody that got it at such an early age, like you said. It doesn't, when you get it that early, now you'd mentioned that it doesn't hit you as hard or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so medication can help. And staying active. And he was. I mean, he was very physically active, running up and down the stairwell of the hospital and, keeping up with us. So it was really his tremors that bothered him in the beginning. And then he started having some other symptoms. He lost his sense of smell, and his handwriting became very microscopic and those things. But It didn't affect his attitude.
Yeah, his attitude is great. I mean, a little mm-hmm. time I spent with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, so the medication really helped with the tremoring. Because I have a personal friend of ours that I went to school with, and he's a little younger than me. I think he got diagnosed in his 30s as well. But is there a way to find out what causes this at such an early age?
The thinking right now is that more times than not, it's the genetic a part of the diagnosis. So Gardner had that 23andMe test, and he found out that he does have the gene. And he has several cousins who have Parkinson's.
Hmm.
Previous to the 23andMe test, he thought it was the pesticides that his family used on their ranch.
Hmm.
And so, with having the genetic form, you know, it's good news, bad news. You know, you may have a slower progression,
right,
but you could pass it on. And every Parkinson's patient is an individual that, no, you cannot find two people that are on the same medication or have the same symptoms. So you can't have a recipe. And what the docs do is it's trial and error for a lot of times with the symptoms. Try this, and if that works, then, you know, we'll see if things increase. We'll increase the medication. Maybe your side effects are worse than the actual symptom. So it's not a cookie cutter type of disease where, okay, you know, with we know with cancer, it's pretty much going to be surgery, chemotherapy, radiation. Those are the kind of options, right? But with Parkinson's, it all depends.
Yeah, it's so true. But what I love about your story is that you started out loving working with infants, and mm-hmm. now you're dealing with your husband, mm-hmm. which is a whole other aspect of the spectrum of mm-hmm. of caregiving, let alone nurturing a young person. But so you've actually been doing this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But actually, I never saw myself as a caregiver. As I mentioned in the article, it wasn't until I felt like I was distracted and running out of patience and running out of steam that one of my really good nursing friends says, "Girlfriend, you have caregiver stress." And I said, "I'm not caregiving. He takes his own bath. He feeds himself. He can get dressed himself." She says, "I'm not talking about physical care. I'm talking about making sure he gets to one place, you know, safely, that he takes his medication, those types of things." And so it's so different doing it for an adult than it is for kids. It's second nature, especially as moms. We're right. reminding, or as you all like to call it, nagging, all the time. And so, but when you're doing that with someone who, as you said, looks like my husband, people that don't know that he has a problem will think, "What is wrong with this woman? Why he can figure things out himself, you know?" And that's a situation he and I had to work out. When I remind you, if it is not in the right tone of voice, please let me know, because I don't want to treat you like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. So over 30 years, what has been one of the hardest things about being a caregiver that you personally have experienced?
Ooh. The hardest thing is to talk about, personal care. When you realize that someone's not doing maybe the best job that they could do, or they're unaware that...
In yourself.
Yeah. When I'm, graphically, I will say smelling something that's shouldn't be in the picture, or, you know, I'll look at what he's wearing and say, "Well, that's not what we should be wearing today." It's so, it's to me, I know it may sound silly, but it's such a hard thing to tell someone that you love that's always been sharp. You know, maybe you need to go in and take that shower again. You need to wash your hands a lot more.
Hmm.
You know, those types of things. I don't think it bothers him.
I'm sure not. I mean, plus, he's a guy.
He's a guy. Yeah.
Right? But, I'm a guy. But, I know that.
Yeah. But having those conversations, it feels like when, you know, I feel like the nurse and not the wife.
Well, maybe like I would maybe just maybe give him a, can you give him a look and say, honey, if I give you this look, that means not smelling good.
Yeah, or? But I give that look a lot of times during the day.
you gotta mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I gotta mix it up. I tried putting notes on the bathroom mirror, and I realized after a while that his vision had changed, and I changed the size of the notes. I changed the font. I put them in. I had typewritten them, and I didn't realize until I started working with dementia how much vision changes.
Yeah, we talked about it in the last show, the show at Mapuana Ta'amu, about how your vision slowly, from seeing all the peripheral, close your hands slowly over time to the point where you only have, when you put on a scuba mask, that's about all you have here. And you lose your peripheral, so you've experienced it yourself with him.
Exactly, and that was one of the high signs of for us to tell him he had to stop driving.
He was still driving all these years?
He stopped driving in 2011.
Wow.
And it was because the kids said, we won't get in the car with him.
Yeah,
I mean. And I was telling him that, but he said, you're so fussy. And that really wasn't how I felt in the car. You know, he was my favorite driver. And then it turned into he was trying to get me to go off the cliff because he kept going further and further from the center line. So he's trying to avoid the other cars. But I was going to be off the road any moment. And didn't understand until much later that his peripheral vision had gone. And so that was another reason why he wasn't seeing what was on the mirror. So I, you know, then had to actually say things to him.
Well, it's interesting because we've had many stories about Alzheimer's. And, you know, just in the last couple of shows, we've heard this. And it's amazing how every time I do a show, all the little things we learn more and more, whether it's Medicare or Medicaid or dementia, Alzheimer's, it's amazing how much we learn. And that's why I love what I do. So anyway, if you just tune to our show, Generation Radio, here on AM 690, or listen to our website, from our website, we're here with Pat Bemis. She's one of our cover people for October-November issue of Generations Magazine. And she's got a great story. I would highly recommend you look at it and read the story and the four different stages of the people here in our magazine. So I thank Pat. I thank you so much. And I know you're going to continue to do workshops more and more. And I see you're going to do one on living longer. I just got a book about I got the books in my car. I just picked it up this morning. It's about how you live to be 120 years old. Or do you want to live to be 120
years old? Or do you?
Yeah. But it's real. And it's something senior expert in the field who started it 40 years ago, Dr. Ken Dykewald, had mentioned as one of his speaks around the world on aging, and he's one of the first really experts in our field, and talk about how there's somebody on this earth that's going to live to be 120 years old for sure, that's living right now.
Exactly.
I don't think it'll be me, but I think somebody will be, and I think if not you, but I think there's somebody there that's really going to be, we're understanding living longer much, much better, but anyway, so we're talking about caregiving, and so what are some of the things that you learned about that so far that gave you the aha moment with dealing with your husband has Parkinson's?
I think the big aha moment is realizing there's no path. There's no path for this, and that was one of my big frustrations.
There's no book.
There's no book, and before my master's degree project was on developing care maps for neonates, so that parents would get an idea of what their baby had to do in order to get home, and so I likened it to Oz, and then you know how do you get to the Emerald City with your baby and get home. And so I think like that. I think in process flows and diagrams. And so I was so frustrated because there was no care map for Parkinson's disease that I could find that, you know, gave you an idea what's next. And there was a period of time when I felt like I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop. And it's not going to be good. And if I just heighten my alertness, it will. I'll know it when it comes. Well, then life takes over, and you're on your way, and then something happens, and you say, oh, this is it. I could have spent an awful lot of time watching and waiting and doing nothing.
So what are some of the things that keep you centered, keep you sane, keep you above water that you've learned or you're currently helping people with that you learned? Because you learn firsthand. That's what I love about your story.
Finding your tribe is so important. And I meet a lot of people in support groups that have really no one. They don't want to ask anybody in their family to be part of their team.
But that's so important.
Yes. And they people make assumptions that their family is the team, and they don't know that they're the team. So it's kind of having somebody on the bench, and they don't know that there's a substitute right fielder until you tell them, you know, we have an injury and you're going in the right field. And you're like, well, I've never played that position before. Right. So I mentioned in the article about my Yaya group, and I would have never gotten this far without these women. And they're not all nurses. One of my friends is a realtor, and another one is a lawyer. And they have kept me focused. They have kept me laughing. They have volunteered to help when I thought no one would want to help. And so finding your tribe is so important, because you feel like you're not alone. And then being honest with your family. You know, I actually had to do that with my sisters-in-law, and now they were just waiting
for you to come to them.
Yes. They didn't want to assume that I needed help, because they've not been in that position.
And you were the nurse. You were
yes.
the professional.
Yes. She's got it wired, and she looks like she's got it all handled.
Well, you do. You put together pretty well, Pat.
And now, you know, right now they're working on a trip that includes Gardner, so I can have a period of time to do whatever I want. And that's their offering. And, you know, you know, just makes me want to cry.
Yeah.
So that's important.
Yeah. And that's something that I try to encourage families to talk to each other. You know, I'm not a professional caregiver. I'm the only one involved with the magazine and a radio show and TV show that does not have firsthand experience with caregiving. But even though I have a lot of stories I could tell, and I can imagine what it's like. But it's one of the things I find it's so hard for families to address. And I don't know what the proper way to do it. I think I'll have them call you or another person on our magazine, Annette Pang, who does communication with families. But I think they have to be open to that. Because I find a lot of families are not open to that. And I always tell people this, the same thing for years. You know, fair doesn't mean equal. And unfortunately, some people take it personally. Some people don't come to the plate like everybody else does. So anyway, we're here with Pat Bemis. We're talking about, you know, her husband has Parkinson's, but Pat is a current caregiver. And we're also going to talk about you because your mother is still alive taking care of her as well. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
When you feel like Vegas, there's just one place to stay. Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play. We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. We got those local meals, just like Auntie Cook's. Aloha spoken here.
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
When it comes to Medicare supplement plans, or what we call Medigap plans, okay, these are plans that fill in the 20% that Medicare doesn't cover. And there's plans from Plan A all the way up to Plan end.
When you're signing up for these plans, there are certain times when you have guaranteed issue. The Medicare Supplement Open Enrollment Period.
Hi, I'm Ed Motosui, and I'm with Financial Benefits Insurance. We're a full-blown insurance company that deals with seniors. We help seniors understand Medicare so they can come to us, and we'll gladly help them understand all the Medicare health options.
Helping you work your way through the confusion, navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5-night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include three meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit VoidVacationsHawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Hauer from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer.
5914777
We go play.
Complete 4 and 5 night packages from $6.99. Vacations Hawaii, your favorite connection to Vegas.
Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today, here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio here, and pretty soon you'll see some of us on Generations TV, and don't forget, Oceanic Cable 16, 7 times a week, every day but Sunday, but twice on Thursday, as I tell people. If you want to find every Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m., that's our prime time. Every 2 weeks, we run out a new TV show. Thanks to Ron Darby here, who's our TV producer, does a great job. And some of the stories that we see, and so the first season last year to now is 13 shows on our website. Go check that out, because we have some great stories like the volleyball aunties and your friend, the guru guy that does the swords and Tai Chi and all his yoga stuff. And then we had Abe Lee, the realtor. We had the 101 swimmer. It was a great story. And he swims every day almost. You can too, Pat.
If I knew how to swim.
Okay, well, you don't know how to swim. I'll teach you how to swim. But swimming is one of the best things I've found, thanks to Julie Moon. And because it's just helped me balance my my stress, keep my strength up for my softball and golf games, but also just to get away and do something that I probably wouldn't have done, because I don't like swimming. I told Julie Moon I don't like swimming. He goes, no, it's really good for you. Just wear a goggle and snorkel. You'll be fine. And I did, and I love it now. I go there 3 to 4 times a week. They're on ward. But we're talking with Pat Bemis, former neonatal nurse, now dealing with her husband has Parkinson's for the last 30 years, which is amazing. And we will have to have – I want to have lunch with him next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he coming
mm-hmm.
next week? Okay. Mm-hmm. We have lunch with you next week. But the stories that we have, they're real. They're honest. And your life as a caregiver – and you had mentioned something that is pretty funny that I wanted to share with that. Your mother is still alive around, mm-hmm. and like my mother-in-law, who's 94 now, and your mother is I'm probably in her 90s.
Actually, she's going to be 87 in
87.
December.
Well, she's
young. I'm hoping to go visit her on her birthday.
Well, good for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you. I tell my friends and family that, yeah, you'll be just like mom. And you were mentioning something as well, right?
Oh, well, you know what's so funny is when I show pictures of my mom when she was younger, my granddaughters think it's me because we do look alike. And so one of the things that my brothers, when I was just there in September, had to remind me is like, you know, not only do you look like mom, but you're starting to act like mom. and I realized it is actually true, which I'm not too upset about. But I when I think back on how some of the things she used to do that just made my eyes cross, you know, kind of like reminding your 35-year-old daughter, well, you might want to take a sweater when you go into the movies, as if, you know, she couldn't figure that out. You know, you just can't stop doing that. and then chatting people up. My mother is famous for doing that. She still does it. In her assisted living facility. She has nicknames for just about everyone in a wheelchair.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And she's in good spirits, which we're very, very grateful. She's enjoying the life that she has, and she's happy and grateful. So I'm proud of that because it was a long haul to get her to that point.
Yeah. Well, I guess like I tell my siblings, you know, you're going to be like mom or dad. You know,
that's true.
And I hope I lose weight to be like my dad, because my dad was never chubby like I am. But yeah, even the demeanor, the thought process, the emotion, I can see that in my siblings as well. They may not think so, but I'm telling you, when I hear stories about, oh, mom is so grouchy, I say, you're going to be like your mom.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me. You think your mom's grouchy? I think you're going to be worse. I mean, I deal with personal friends of mine now that are in their 50s and they're dealing with their parents. And I know, because I'm with the mid-packs, so we dorms, we know their parents pretty well over time. And I say, you're going to be just like your dad or probably worse, you know, and especially the baby boomers. Our era, we grew up, right? We were feisty. We want to save the world. We're very giving, but we're going to ask questions. We're not going to just take, like, you know, some like our parents did it because their parents said to do it. But the baby boomers now are going to do more research. We can go online. I Google everything now. I mean, you tell me a person's name or, like, we'll sit and watch TV with my wife and goes, what year was he born? He was like, he's probably 75. And she'll just Google it. No, he's 74. His birthday is this day. You know, it's pretty funny. Or, I remember where the city was located at, and she'll Google that and just find it. It's just, so we're going to want information, and that's one of the things that I found early on working with my mortgage business, that I didn't know anything about being a senior. I didn't know anything about the needs, wants, concerns. Then the big picture came out, wow, this Alzheimer's disease is going to get huge. And so when I heard about you for a couple of years. I know you spoke at our AGM place, and then you involve ARP, but your work today now, I think, is hopefully is rewarding, but really you've helped a tremendous amount of people out there, Pat. I hope you know that.
Well, I hope so. But it's, you know, giving back for what I've been given and a lot of the help and the information. You find information in the weirdest places, and weird being you didn't expect to find it. And so I'm always looking, and, you know, the first Generation magazine, I actually cockroached out of the neurologist's office. And I thought, oh, I need this. And that's when I found out about Aging in Place, and that just exploded my mind. I had no clue that there were so many opportunities for seniors, and then as well as issues that I hadn't thought about. And so, you know, I think we are part of the baby boomer generation of, my biggest prayer is to help change the world. And I'm trying to do that at my pace, one person at a time.
Well, I definitely think you are. And I would recommend everybody, when you're listening to this radio show or the TV show, read Pat's story in a magazine. I would definitely for that, but you can gain so much, and that's really the premise behind Changing Generations magazine to Hawaii's Resource for Life, because it affects everybody's life, whether you're a teenager or an 80-year-old or a 50-year-old. it affects everybody in the family. Mm-hmm. And that's why we started radio and then now with TV with Ron Darby here. But it's really something that we want to be able to, that's my community service. Because people have helped me with dealing with my clients. But I think it's bringing authentic, real people and great information. And you've conveyed your story so well that I think hopefully people will resonate with it. And they'll learn because, I mean, every issue I see bits and pieces. I don't see the whole thing put together until it's put together, actually, the day before we go to print. And now I leave it right next to my TV when I watch the TV, and I'll pick it up. And, you know, I read everything. But when I look at everything now, the resource guide, all the stories on caregiving, they're fantastic. And, mm-hmm. you know, I tell caregivers when I hear a story, they don't know where to go. This is where we go. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I've been on very many boards, and I was golfing yesterday, and I was actually having a cocktail with my friend's father, who's it's got to be in his late 70s, and having a cocktail with him and his son, before he left me, I left early. I said, hey, he goes, but I'm going to read your magazine. You know, we got some really good stuff in here, and he's dealing with caregiving as well for his wife. So everywhere I go, the resource that we provide is taken and used, and people read the magazine. So it's just something that, like yourself, and I appreciate all you do, Pat, is that we get more and more people involved, get more and more people to understand where you can go and read your stories, because there's so many people like you, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the other part of that is that Hawaii is perfect bowl for this type of energy. When I think about some of the support groups that are on the neighbor islands, they're grassroots. They're doing it on a wing and a prayer, and it's because there's a need, and people are stepping up. And when you do that, then other community organizations are like, well, maybe we could help you. You know, you didn't have to ask for it, but they're recognizing there's a need and that this is really community-based. I think that, you know, we still have more work to do. We need to reach other areas as well. But it's, you know, one step at a time. And realizing that if we can get people active, no matter what they can do, it's helping them and us.
Yeah. Well, fortunately for Generations Magazine, we're distributed statewide through the library system.
Mm-hmm.
So Molokai, Lanai, they mm-hmm. all get the magazine thanks to KTA and a Big Island that distributes magazine. And our TV and radio shows that reaches more people that may not be able to pick up a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's been really good. So, but, you know, you're with your mother, you know, living in an assisted living place, and you're being the remote caregiver. How does that affect with you and your siblings?
Well, I am grateful to my two brothers. I have a sister who opted out of being involved in caregiving. And that was very difficult because we had always thought after my dad died that we could split things four ways and that would be really tolerable. And then when it was down to three, and my sister skipping out really caused my mother a lot of mental stress.
Hmm.
And then there was a lot of anger amongst us. And so we've worked through that, and we really are a good team. And I think that has helped my mom live well, knowing that the three of us are solid. I have amazing sisters-in-law and nieces that live in the area that have stepped up without asking for anything in return. And I think, you know, we're setting the example for the next generation. This is how this can work.
Absolutely. I mm-hmm. mean, I've seen many, many stories where the children are helping out and they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not a trained counselor, so I can't say counsel, but I've talked to thousands of families, and I have seen situations where, like yourself, where one sibling opt out for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I think that reason could be when they're being brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Dad didn't, or mom didn't treat her so well, or Pat was
whatever.
Her favorite daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they're like, oh, I'm getting you back. It's mm-hmm. unfortunate it happens. But then again, also I've seen people come back.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, hopefully time heals issues, family issues, whether it's religion or location where they live, or maybe their spouse didn't want you to do so much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but hopefully we know it'll come back at some point down the mm-hmm. road. You know, but what's some of the advice, you know, specifically to Parkinson's,
mm-hmm.
because I think there's a lot, we don't pay attention to Parkinson's as much as I think we should,
mm-hmm.
but what are some of the things that you, tips that you give caregivers that are dealing with specifically with a Parkinson's a loved one?
I think one of the big things is who's going to get information on it. You know, you talk to couples and it's one or the other, but not both. It's not always the person with Parkinson's
really?
That looks up the internet or finds books or researches. And that was true with my husband. Gardner would go to his appointments and the rest of the period of time, he took his medication and that was it.
So you had to do all the work.
So, yeah.
Well, you're the nurse.
So I, you know, when I started teaching at HPU and I would get to the neurologic part of nursing, I would say, see this picture of someone with Parkinson's? Well, this isn't what my husband looks like, and here he comes in the door. So not everybody looks like this picture. And so you can't tell just by him standing here with a suit jacket and the tie on that he has Parkinson's. His hand's in his pocket, so he doesn't show you his tremor. So you can't make those types of statements that this is the way it is. And the textbooks just couldn't keep up with what is happening with Parkinson's. And that's the other thing is keeping up with what's new and how much you want to know. And sometimes you just can't take it all in at one sitting or 1 year.
Well, you've had 30 years of that.
Mm-hmm. And it has changed so much. You know, I remember when we were getting married, one of my supervisor said to me, "Are you sure you want to marry him? Because he's going to be in a wheelchair before you know it."
Why is that?
Well, that was her paradigm. Oh. That's what she saw as happening with Parkinson's. Well, you saw him. He's not in a wheelchair.
What, you mean you were married after he had Parkinson's?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Didn't think about that, but when you mentioned that, like, mm-hmm. oh.
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where she's coming from.
Yes, so she liked him, and she liked me, but she was like, you know, you better think about this. And when Gardner had asked me to marry him, he said, you know, I have Parkinson's. I work with you, I know. And I said, but you know, I have two kids.
Oh.
And he says, well, I don't think they're equal. And I said, have you? You've met them, because he was their pediatrician.
Oh.
I said, well, you know, we don't know what that's all going to look like. I don't know what your Parkinson's going to look like, but I know right now what Parkinson's looks like, and this is what I want. So I'd rather you with it than without it. And so, you know, that's how things went. And, you know, he proved her wrong. He's not in a wheelchair.
No, I've met him.
Mm-hmm.
And
I, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen or when that's going to happen. But we don't live our life like that. We live like, okay, this is what's happening today. We used to be long-term planners. And we're going to go to this place in a year. We start, you know, making reservations, blah, blah, blah. We're always thinking about what's happening, you know, 2019, 2020. Yeah, we just know now.
Oh, well, I've known you for a little while. I know you like to do things. You're very active, and I've been to your home. Boy, you do a lot of things, and you travel a lot. And so it's really nice. It's refreshing to hear a caregiver. I don't know if you can say you deal with it so well, but as much as I've known you, every time I spend time with you, you seem to be all there, though. But I know there's a lot behind that mm-hmm. you deal with.
Well, you know, I have seen a therapist when I get to those blue days, when I feel like I'm losing myself, and that I feel like that's all I'm defined as, you know, as a caregiver, and that there's another side of me that I've had to put away, and until there's an opportunity, and the opportunity recently was going to my niece's wedding.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And I had a good time.
Where was that?
Let me say that. It was in Southern Maryland. It was an outdoor wedding. There was a live band, 12-piece band, and I hardly sat down. My sister-in-law, we took our shoes off immediately, and we're a dancing family. My brothers were dancing together. One of my daughters was there and her husband, and I have not had so much fun with my whole family. And that, I needed that. And I didn't go with my husband. So it was my time. And that'll take me for a very long time to have different energy and to be by myself. And now, let me just say this. While I was there, he went to his 50th high school reunion.
Who, your husband?
He did.
Oh, okay.
Alone.
Wow.
Yes. So I was taking a big risk. I did a lot of praying. He flew first class, and he had wheelchair assistance from point to point, and his best friends from high school picked him up at baggage claim, and the rest is history.
Cool.
He had an absolute blast. And I think the thing was that he knew I was going to have a good time. He was a little bit worried about how safe he was going to be until he got off the plane. Mm. And he needed a break from me. And that's another thing the caregivers don't always think about is sometimes they would like not to see you for a period of time.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Could you just lay off me, stop reminding me, I'm watching football, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, making sure that you give each other permission, like, it's not you, it's the disease that I need a break from. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go to Savers and walk up and down the aisles for an hour.
Oh, good. Well, you just answered my question about how you decompress.
I do that. I love thrift shopping, but I like sewing and I make art.
I've been to that room you have at your house.
And I make things. I don't know that it's art, but I make things, and that's my happy place.
Well, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're probably going to be more known for your work out in the community, doing workshops, doing speaking engagements, telling your stories, because there aren't a whole lot of people out there. I mean, there are, but I think, you know, your story is so real and you keep it real. And every time I've met you, you've been a real person and sincere. And so I think really, you know, that's going to resonate more as we get you out more too. We are been doing more next year, and everything next year is going to be healthy aging. But, you know, one of the things that caregivers don't realize is that they have to decompress and they have to stay healthy. So what are, besides, you know, all your work that you do in the community, but also in your happy place at your home, what else do you like to do? Do you like to travel? Do you like to spend time with your kids?
I like to read. I'm going through a phase now of reading magazines and articles in magazines. I look for cool articles that have something for me to think about. I do yoga, and I like walking. But Gardner and I can walk together. When I walk, I sprint. I'm like on a mission. I can't make my feet go small steps. But we have been walking around the state capitol, and I try to point out things for him to look up and to notice, because most of the time he's so busy trying not to fall and to step in the right place. And I think he missed the whole point of walking. So
yeah.
We do that together, but I really, I enjoy being outside.
Yeah, so do I. So with a lot of our stories here, we have one about you're the current caregiver, Jody Michon, who has done work with the Alzheimer's Association, was a past caregiver. I believe it was 12 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Laurie and Gerald, who are just getting into caregiving, but not full-time, but they're like the future caregiver. Then we have Carly McKay, who's 80 years old, who's been on our show. Have you met Carlene?
No, but she's amazing. Her story was unbelievable. And then the article she wrote, I was taking notes.
Yeah, she's active, and she give you a hard rub with how active you both are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's got a lot of energy, and I got involved with her because she does workforce development stories, and I wrote books, and she wrote an article about that, and I got fascinated by her story and her energy, and I couldn't believe she was 80 years old. So we had her come on the radio show, and I've met a couple times, and boy, she's got a strong personality. She knows her field in and out. And we talked about aging, and she told me, Percy, you know, I'm not going to age. You know that, right? I said, well, I mean, we're all going to age, but, you know, I know a lot of people don't think they're going to die like her. But I said, at some point before you die, you're going to need some form of care. And she didn't want to talk about it because she's not going to die. So the following week, I talked to her on the phone. She goes, Percy, you know what? You put kind of made me stop my my steps. And I had to think about, really, I'm going to need care at some point. And that's why I got her to start thinking about caregiving and long-term care. Mm-hmm. And so she does her research, and she realized that she can't qualify for long-term care insurance now because she's 80.
Mm-hmm.
I think they stop at 77 mm-hmm. or 78. Mm-hmm. But now she's really kind of putting that plan in place, talking to her kids. She lives with her son. But now she's got to think about that. I personally don't think she thinks a lot about it because she's still going and she's still doing workshops and she's like you yourself. But when do you think, or have you ever thought about it at the point where you're going to need some form of care?
Yes, I have a plan. I know where I want to go. And I also know if I need care, who I want directing that care. I've made a pact with the woman who was my maid of honor, and I'm her person. So
she's about your age?
Yep. She's younger, but we don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, but I mean, so what happens if maybe she couldn't do that job?
Well, I have, I think, 6 godchildren that I think, especially definitely one of them that would step up. I'm not sure my kids would want to be a caregiver. I think that would be fine with me, that they would be my kids.
Hmm.
But someone, I haven't had that conversation with the next generation, but I'm not that worried about it because I wouldn't have a problem asking.
Yeah. So I used to work for a mortgage company called MetLife. MetLife is the largest insurance carrier, mm-hmm. but then they had a mortgage division. And I love their little tagline for the ifs in life.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I approach families and I talk about different situations, that, well, if that doesn't work out, what's the other plan? What's the backup plan? Because mm-hmm. we always, and even with my clients today, I always tell them, we need to think of the worst case scenario. And if we can address that,
mm-hmm.
then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
But if we haven't addressed the worst case scenario, let's say your girlfriend couldn't do it, or your niece said, no, Ma, mm-hmm. Auntie, I got to work. My husband doesn't want mm-hmm. me to do that. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'd toss it out to people to not make you think so much about it because you got a lot going on, but just to really put it down the road when you get 5, 10 minutes, an hour to think about. So I'm 58. I always think about when I'm going to be 75, 80 years old. Hopefully I live to as long as my parents, 88 and 90. But I do that a lot nowadays, and how my life's going to be, because I love my life and I love what I did. I don't have any regrets, but now I'm looking forward. And that's something that I think we all need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love your story. Thank you for being in a magazine. Give us one last thing that you could tell the caregivers listening to this show today.
I think if I would talk with you in person, I would say to find a moment of quiet in amidst the chaos and have a don't know mind. So not think that you should know or you should have known, but you're taking it in now and you're willing to learn. So not to feel like you need to have all the answers. Even if you've made a mistake, then that gives you an opportunity to investigate. But to find some space in the day, you know, for yourself, and then ask for help and tell people what help looks like.
Yeah, that's so true and so profound, because people, they don't realize, well, can you help out? But they need to know exactly what they want and mm-hmm. what you need. So,
mm-hmm.
Pat, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And we'll have to get you back on and let you know what all your workshops you're doing in the future with regard to living longer and, of course, caregiving. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. But anyway, don't forget, generations808.com has all our past issues, our past radio shows, and our past TV shows at generations808.com. So thank you very much. Aloha, everybody, and live well.